Scott Shane is a national security reporter for the New York Times based in Washington, D.C., where he has worked for more than a decade. His new book is Objective Troy, A Terrorist, A President, and the Rise of the Drone. The book tells the story of Anwar al-Awlaki, the once celebrated American imam who called for moderation after 9/11, but ultimately directed his talents to the mass murder of his fellow citizens. Again, the name of the book is Objective Troy, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Scott Shane to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Joe, thanks for having me on.
What brought you to this particular story?
Well, I've been covering terrorism and counterterrorism really since 9/11, like a lot of reporters. And I wanted to find a way to look into something that has perplexed me ever since 9/11, which is what possesses someone to decide that the best use of their life is to try to kill strangers. And Anwar al-Awlaki, the guy I chose to write about, raises that question in a particularly acute fashion because he was, as a young preacher, he was a very successful and quite prominent moderate imam. He preached in three different mosques in the States, seemed to be having a pretty happy life, denounced the 9/11 attacks, and praised American freedoms. So when he ended up spending the last years of his life plotting to kill Americans from the wilds of Yemen with al-Qaeda, you know, he seemed to me to pose that question in a particularly interesting way.
What do we know about his start in the ranks of coming to the position of being on the president's so-called kill list?
Well, after he left the States, he went first to the UK, then to Yemen, steadily becoming more radical in what he was saying. He gradually embraced violence and essentially declared that he was at war with America. And the precipitating factor was the underwear bomb plot on Christmas Day in 2009. Folks might remember that a plane was coming in to Detroit from Amsterdam, and a young Nigerian aboard with this contraption hidden in his underwear tried to blow up the plane. Fortunately, the bomb fizzled, and the plane landed safely. But it turned out that Anwar al-Awlaki, from his hideout in Yemen, had actually sort of vetted and coached this young Nigerian man to carry out the plot, and had even told him in sort of a last instruction to make sure that he waited until he was over U.S. soil before he blew up the plane. That was what, in the view of the intelligence agencies in the White House, made al-Awlaki not just a propagandist for al-Qaeda, but a so-called operational terrorist. And that's when Obama ordered a legal review that found that, in the opinion of the Justice Department at least, it was legal and constitutional to kill al-Awlaki, even though he was an American citizen.
It was about a year later after the so-called underwear bombing in October 2010 that he helped plan the placement of bombs and ink cartridges in printers that were shipped from Yemen on cargo planes, which were headed to Chicago. Again, another near miss.
Another near miss. Turned out that the Saudis were onto this, apparently by a guy who was sort of a defector from al-Qaeda, and they gave a tip to the U.S. just in time for the planes to be stopped and searched. There were two different planes involved, and one was stopped in Dubai and one was stopped in England, and they managed to get these bombs off before they went off. But one touch that was sort of al-Awlaki's hand was to address those two packages to Chicago. And that was very deliberately chosen because it was Obama's city. And in fact, in al-Awlaki's magazine, he oversaw the production of an English language al-Qaeda magazine called Inspire. They had actually run a picture of the Chicago skyline before that, you know, a sort of a hint as to what they were going to try.
As I mentioned, the subtitle of the book is A Terrorist, A President, and the Rise of the Drone. And I'd like to talk about that part of it, the rise of the drone. And you talk about in the book about how drones change the face of warfare. Talk a little bit about what problems it has created for American leadership when it comes to the killing of Anwar Aliki.
The drone first came of age as a surveillance tool in the 90s, but it was really only after 9/11 that people worked in a rush, basically, to load small missiles on the drones so that you could actually take a shot at someone that you saw from overhead. And, you know, as people know, it's created this possibility for operators to sit in trailers in Nevada and shoot these missiles at folks on the ground thousands of miles away in Pakistan or in Yemen, in this case. And, you know, when Obama came into office, he had famously once said in opposing the Iraq invasion that he was not against all wars, he was against dumb wars. And I think he'd kind of come to see both the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan as dumb wars in the sense that they were enormously costly in terms of lives, in terms of money, in terms of even the reputation of the United States. And he wanted to take on the problem of terrorism in much more of a pinprick way. And so he actually came in with a great interest in the drone and its capabilities. Obama often said to his aides, "Let's kill the people who are trying to kill us," by which he meant, you know, the big wars had killed a whole lot of people who were not actually trying to kill Americans. And so it looked like a weapon of great promise in counterterrorism. And it has killed a lot of very dangerous people. In practice, like so much, so many new inventions, it's turned out to have a lot of complications as well. It's killed quite a number of civilians because it turns out that it's very difficult to know with certainty who is below, you know, the video operator on the ground. You know, you're sitting in your trailer in Nevada and you see images on the screen and you may have other sources of intelligence, but it's easy to make a mistake and kill someone who turns out not to be the terrorist you were looking for. And that's created quite a backlash to this weapon. In the case of Anwar al-Awlaki, the first American, you know, deliberately hunted down and killed on the orders of a president, in history, there's another complication that's maybe even more significant. You know, I think that Obama and his aides thought of killing Aliki as a significant victory. He described it that way in the campaign against terrorism. But Aliki was mainly important as a radicalizer, as a voice that attracted people, recruited people to al-Qaeda and its cause, and encouraged them to attack the U.S. And that voice has lived on. I mean, it's the nature of the Internet. If you go on YouTube today and put Anwar al-Awlaki's name into the search engine, you come up with more than 40,000 videos ranging from Awlaki's early sort of mainstream lectures on the life of the Prophet Muhammad all the way up to his call for attacks against the U.S. And those videos to this day have an enormous impact. If you talk to folks at the FBI, they'll tell you that most of the people they arrest in the United States for terrorism-related crimes, if you look at their laptops and you look back at the history and what they've been watching, you'll find that Aliki's videos remain a very potent source of radicalization.
You do note that civilian deaths, as we were just talking about, the civilian deaths have generated hostility to this program, to the American drone program, especially in Pakistan and Yemen. where we should note that Awlaki's 16-year-old son was killed just two weeks after his father was killed. American officials say that was a mistake.
That's right. I managed to get to Yemen, which is a pretty wild place these days, last year, and managed to talk to Anwar's father, his brother, and his uncle. And one of the things we talked about was the death of his 16-year-old son, Abdulrahman, who by all accounts was a very sweet kid and not on anybody's kill list, no history of terrorism. And American officials say it was a mistake, that they were actually shooting for an al-Qaeda figure who they thought was present this evening among a group of people eating dinner essentially by the side of the road. And it turned out that not only was that al-Qaeda figure not present, but this 16-year-old, his 17-year-old cousin, were there and were killed in that strike. And while, you know, during my visit to Yemen, I talked to a lot of folks, of course, about these drone strikes. And I would say that a lot of people were understanding, at least, or accepting of the idea that America would try to kill Anwar al-Awlaki because, let's face it, he was trying to attack the U.S. And Yemen's a tribal country. They can understand that. But the death of the 16-year-old seemed outrageous to people, completely unnecessary and inexplicable, and really hurt the image of the U.S. and U.S. counterterrorism in Yemen.
You talked about the YouTube hits a moment ago, but talk a little bit about this idea of killing Awlaki and what that did to make him a martyr in the eyes of his admirers and giving his voice authenticity and authority to those believers.
Well, that's what I think U.S. officials did not anticipate. Although there were some Muslim commentators who actually warned about this before the U.S. actually went and found and killed Awlaki, is that by killing a guy like that, you make him into a martyr, certainly in the eyes of his admirers. And that has, you know, if anything, given his voice more power with those who are interested in this cause. And in fact, even the mainstream stuff, I mentioned that he has given a long series of lectures on the life of the Prophet Muhammad, completely innocuous mainstream Islamic history. But now every person who goes to YouTube and watches some of those lectures may be thinking, this is the preacher who America killed. So I think in some ways, you know, it's just made all of that material much more incendiary. And one other thing that you find on YouTube is that since his death in 2011, a lot of his fans have created their own sort of tribute videos, often specifically calling him a martyr, we'll say, you know, tribute to the martyr Anwar al-Awlaki. And some of them are very well done and really very moving. And I'm sure play a real role in enhancing his influence, which is quite pernicious in the terrorism field.
What about that influence with ISIS? What did ISIS learn from Awlaki?
Well, it's interesting that no English-speaking figure has arisen from ISIS with anything like the appeal of Anwar al-Awlaki. And so not surprisingly, perhaps ISIS, in some of its propaganda materials and videos, has actually used Awlaki and his image, his voice, and just sort of stolen it because the message is essentially the same. The other thing that ISIS learned from Awlaki, with another American named Samir Khan, created this English language magazine, really kind of shocking to look at because it's a slick magazine along the lines of, you know, something you might find on any magazine stand. But the message it's preaching is, you know, essentially kill civilians, find ways to kill Americans. And Awlaki recognized that after 9/11, American defenses were greatly strengthened. and that it would be tough to pull off a big 9/11 style plot. So his message to Americans who took an interest in his advice was to go ahead and do what you can on your own, you know, blow something up, stage an attack, shoot some people. So the kind of thing that he encouraged was like that attack by Nidal Hassan, the army psychiatrist, on Fort Hood in 2009, or the Boston Marathon bombing in 2013. The whole idea was, if you're in the West, don't wait for instructions, don't wait for an elaborate plot, just mount whatever attack you can pull off on your own. And that message has very much been picked up by ISIS, the Islamic State, in its propaganda.
Well, the name of the book is Objective Troy, A Terrorist, A President, and the Rise of the Drone. It is published by Tim Duggan Books. Scott Shane, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. I appreciate your time and expertise.
Joe, thanks for having me on.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book, Objective Troy, A Terrorist, A President, and the Rise of the Drone. Scott Shane is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.